Morning. So before I get going, you're going to see my presentation. I'm stuck between Dr. Mason and Dr. Kittles, but I'm kind of the lab experiment here. So from the conversation you heard about genes and skin color, I'm going to share a little bit about my life in environmental aspects, and I'm going to challenge my colleagues here. One, will I live to that life expectancy age? And what change? What are those social correlates that are influencing my decisions to make it to my life expectancy? So let me put this into context. I grew up here. I spent half my life here, and I've spent half my life in Chicago. So I'm going to take you through this journey of looking at, here is an African American who is mixed because of French, Spanish, whatever you want to call it, and will I make it to the end? What the expectation is for African Americans based on all the social, now I won't be able to do all the social determinants, but I'm going to pick out a few for us to show that correlation, show that pattern. So this is kind of a visual exercise, so I'm going to need you to, when you see the maps, you're going to have to, as they move along, you're going to have to overlay them for me in your mind as we go forward, okay? Is that good? Now, I'm an epidemiologist by heart, so of course we've been sitting for a little while, so we're going to do a quick little exercise as we move forward. So, I'm at the American Hospital Association. So, this slide, why place and race matters, is now important to hospitals in our healthcare delivery system. You ask, well, why? It's this little nuances in the Affordable Care Act that has gotten the healthcare system really paying attention. And there was one aspect that was written in that I believe has turned out to be very important for changing the paradigm of how hospitals and healthcare delivery systems deliver care. And that is, it's all about money. And why is it all about money? Because now I get punished as a hospital for readmissions, right? Well, we thought it was a punitive write-in, but actually it's probably one of the best public health metrics ever indirectly written into an act that's going to now help us in our work. And what we found and what we studied is that we found almost 60% of the variation in U.S. hospital readmission rates can be explained by the county where the hospital is located. So guess who's now interested in public health? It's not for the saving the world. It's about, I don't want to be penalized. But what we in the public health community need to understand is, I'm not interested in changing your heart. If you're on the same mission with me, let's go. We need to spend our time with my colleagues who are in the hospital. They run 24/7 operations. It's about the bottom line. They're under tremendous pressure. They don't have time to think about kumbaya. But there are areas in which we have shared agendas, and that's where we got to meet our hospital colleagues at the financial conversation and then get what we need. So, we know that why place and race matters. Well, we know that these 10 achievements have played a great deal in race and place and what matters. Our life expectancy has grown because of these 10 achievements. So I'm going to talk about, in my conversation, I'm going to talk about number 1 and number 7. And the other ones the other achievements that are not on here, but that's the hard work, the gooey work that we are on, is violence, child health indicators, and mental health or behavior health. I'll talk about those three in my comparison about where I'm from and where I'm living. So keep that in your mind. But again, place and race do matter. So a little exercise is to get the arms raised. Who can tell me the top 15 countries by population? Raise your hand. Okay, who do you think is up there first? China. You think? So you guys think it's China right here. Who's this right here? Who?
India.
And who's here? Right here, Russia. Brazil. Okay, I'm not going to spend all our time here. All right, so let's look what we got. So we have China, India, U.S., Indonesia, Brazil. And then we go on down, Pakistan and Nigeria. But I would challenge you, as public health folks, that we actually have a whole lot of other countries without borders, without flags, that we really actually need to be concerned about.
such as the country of diabetes. The country of diabetes is 340 million individuals who have been diagnosed or undiagnosed. Bigger than the U.S. And when you add on to that, break that figure down, 98.4 of them live in China, and China has no health infrastructure. So it was wonderful that we saw President Obama talk about climate change, but there are a lot of other issues that China is about to confront in addition to breathable air. India really doesn't have a sound infrastructure, health infrastructure, but it has 65 million diagnosed and undiagnosed diabetics. And it goes on and so forth and so forth. You can sit here, the country of obesity is larger than all of them, and so on and so on. So that's love about epidemiology. You get to see this, but you get to see it in a different context. So place and race do matter. So let's talk about this story. So I think it's kind of this few minutes I'm going to have with you, I'm going to kind of put the opening talk with Isabel Wilkerson talking about that great migration. I don't know why I migrated to Chicago, except that's where my wife said. But my wife is also from New Orleans, too, so we both grew up here. So let me put this map in your mind. So you've seen this. Dr. Benjamin put this up. Let me explain this map to you. Up here, that's my maternal grandmother's house. She's 87, so I kind of agree with that. She's still here. That's good. This is my childhood home right here, the West Bank. Now, if you know, if you're from New Orleans, prior to Katrina, my New Orleans colleagues didn't want to pay the toll, and they want to have nothing to do with the West Bank. That's a long history, you know, I understand. But all of a sudden, they get a little water, now they want to move over, and now they're all in the West Bank. Long story, I'm still upset about that. I still carry that grudge. So I'm going to give you my footprint in New Orleans. So here, this is my mother's childhood home. This is where I grew up. So I'm going to take this as, I'm expected to be 75. My life expectancy appears to be 75. Would you go with me on that? Okay, so let's look at my footprint. So how I've moved through these life expectancy segments or zip codes or wards of New Orleans. So every day I cross the river, catch a ferry, got two buses, and went to high school here in the 7th Ward. So this would be roughly about 66 years where I spent my experience. If you understand where St. Augustine High School is, and it was surrounded by the projects, and just that, surrounded by projects, well, you know, that was a challenge in and of itself. I went to college, undergraduate here, Tulane, so spent some of my life here, so I would sit here and say, well, now I went from 66 years up to about 71. Okay. So, and then, I just for fun, my wife and I have talked about moving back at some point. And we've chosen that if we should move back, we would move back around the Chapatulas Magazine Street area. That's where we come to find out. I think that's where we love. So, I'm back up to 75 if I move back here. All right, so you got the map, you got that picture in your head. So let's map my experience through this time through Chicago, and I challenge, will I make it? So, again, thinking about that context, let me start comparing Illinois and Louisiana. Let's look at it from there. So we know U.S., great, $2.8 trillion. Again, when I start off my talk, I'm talking to public health colleagues, I always talk about when I'm talking from the prospect of healthcare delivery systems, is about money. We spend $2.8 trillion, we know that figure, and we get 37th in the world in terms of health outcomes. And you can look at, this is the world, we spend $48.3 on healthcare expenditures. That's everything in, okay? Illinois, right here, we spend about $122 billion, and we're roughly about 26th out of 51. 51 is the D.C., okay? So, and in Louisiana, roughly about $43 billion in total healthcare expenditures. And we're somewhere around 48. Now, okay, so all right, did I make the right decision on
moving, or should I come back? So that's what she should be going back and forth with.
Well, let's look at Medicaid expansion.
Okay.
Well, Illinois, we're broke, but we expanded Medicaid.
Louisiana,
we're broke, and we didn't expand Medicaid. Okay. So far... Well, wait a minute. We still don't know how we're going to pay for Medicaid expansion yet, okay? We have 5% income, and now we have a new governor who says he's going to roll that back, which is going to be fascinating, but another presentation. What I want to sit here and get in your mind is, okay, would you call this one kind of equal? Because really about Medicaid expansion, you should be in some kind of good financial position also to kind of do this. And it's one thing to have, there's good public debt. Okay, but in Illinois, we have some good public debt, and then we have a lot of bad public debt. And that's what's bringing us down. Louisiana, I would sit here and say, has really kind of good public debt. Okay, but I would sit here and say, well, that's about the same. Well, let's look at insured, okay, because my premiums on health insurance are affected by who's insured, just like your automobile insurance. Okay, so when we look at Illinois, which is right here, we'll sit here and say, okay, in terms of adults uninsured, we're underneath the U.S. average. When we look at children uninsured here, we're doing pretty good. And that has to do actually one of you know, every governor, and I should have put up a slide on governors, because you see here, governors who went to jail and didn't, I didn't really make any significant change, okay? So, but respectfully talking about some of the governors and what they did care about, for example, his name just escaped me, bless his heart, the longtime governor here in Louisiana, who did some phenomenal things around education for the state, and he then went off, later after he left office, he went on to federal prison.
Right.
But he did some very good things for Louisiana, and I'm sorry, I can't think of his name. Edwin Edwards. Yes, you know him. Okay? Everyone loved his personality. He loved Louisiana, and he told you, look, I'm going to do everything for Louisiana. Before that, I got to get a cut. I was perfectly fine. At least he was honest. Okay. We had Governor Blagojevich. Okay. Call him what he is, but he did in that market time right before he changed Medicaid prior to Medicaid expansion. Did some really things. Opened up children's insurance for quite a bit for Illinois.
All kids.
Okay. So in terms of governors and how they thought about insurance, ironically, I kind of picked this. Did I move to where I was coming from? And you know, so there you go. So and here's Louisiana over here down the paradigm. You know, and Louisiana has more uninsured adults, and we're right here on the childhood uninsured. Okay, so let's break down some more of those comparisons. It's kind of like shopping for a car. It was fun putting this presentation together because now all my family, I told my family, and now they all want me to do this for them. So Illinois, let's look at overall rank, as I told you, 26th. Access and affordability, 24th out of 51 in terms of states. Prevention and treatment, 23. Avoidable hospital use and costs, we're up at 39. Equity dimension, okay. 18, just health disparity, looking at health inequities. And then healthy lives, 27. So out of that ranking comes at 26. Okay, so keep that in mind. We move over to Louisiana. It's the race to the bottom. Okay. I was hoping we were better than Mississippi. All I was hoping for. But look at this. We got a 50 on here. Okay. So we have access and affordability, 39. Prevention and treatment is 41. Avoidable hospital use and cost, 50. Equity dimensions, 29. Healthy lives, 50. And I've been thinking about since I've been home, a couple of colleagues around here walked around and was sharing some thoughts about
Medicaid expansion and what we thought about it. And there was one comment that I reflected on, and I'm hurt that we don't have Medicaid expansion, because understanding the people who need it from this community. But then when you look at the health outcomes of my home state, we love our drinking. We love our smoking. We love our food. And everything is laissez le bon temps rouler. So I did take French. Okay. Only because my grandmother, my paternal grandmother spoke French, and that was the only way I could understand it. Okay. But we love those things that really make our lives. So if you look at, as I believe the Secretary of State in opening, we are a very happy state, and I know why. But imagine trying to now add Medicaid onto all those social determinants. So one, we got to take care of smoking. We don't. The most activity we do is right in the 1 week, and that's Mardi Gras. Okay. Getting our food together, putting it in the cooler, lifting the cooler in the truck, driving as fast as we can to get our spot on a neutral ground. Now y'all don't know what the neutral ground is, but y'all. Okay. Then it's standing up there and jumping up and down for some beads from the parade. That's the most physical activity the state of Louisiana does in this time period, okay? All right? So how do you put that back into a box? Because if you actually expand it, the balloon from $43 billion in healthcare expenditures will naturally expand, because it's not because necessarily unhealthy. It's just the things that we do and contribute to our healthy lives actually make us unhealthy. It's Louisiana. Now let's look at behavioral health. I don't know what it is. It's the same state. Okay, in terms of mental health treatment, past year mental health treatment, the U.S. is in green here, Illinois is in blue, and Louisiana purple. Again, roughly, that's really no statistical, obviously no statistical difference. Unmet need in terms of mental health treatment, really no difference again. When we look at substance abuse, which is fascinating, you know, because it's tape, I won't say some of the things I do when I come home when it comes to substance abuse here. We don't have the Dr. Kibbs, we don't have the drive-through Wendy's. We have the drive-through daiquiri shops. Okay, and if you understand my great city is. When you take the straw out, it's a closed container. And when you put the straw in, it's a closed container. I didn't tell you that. You get picked up. I'm not going to even tell you. Okay. All right? But all of that, in terms of where we start drinking, the only reason that we changed the drinking age, and I can remember this as a kid, was because of the federal highway money. It had nothing to do with that we wanted to do this and be safe. It had to do with money. Okay? But, again, I really kind of like moved to the same state. But Illinois' drinking restrictions are very restrictive, okay? But there's some other issues going on, and that could be cocaine, synthetic marijuana, et cetera, et cetera. It could be playing a part in both states. Yeah. Let's look at some childhood indicators. Wow. Again, I thought I picked a different state. But it looks like we didn't. In terms of the first one, starting, I'm going to go from left, your left to right. Louisiana and Illinois are tied in terms of children with medical homes. But Illinois, we expanded Medicaid. We have all kids. Okay. Children with medical and dental preventive care visits, Illinois has done quite better. Illinois is in red. Louisiana is in blue. Children with emotional, behavior, developmental problems who receive needed mental health care, 41 to 51, for me, it's not too big of a difference. Okay. We're tied in terms of children who receive all recommended doses of 7 key vaccines. So remember in that 10 achievements, 1 in 7, okay, it was 1 in 7, the healthy mothers, I was referring to my mother, and the vaccinations. Well, guess what? Illinois and Louisiana are tied. And then we will look at obesity. I'll talk a little bit more about that one shortly. Right now. In terms of obesity, Illinois 37, Louisiana 50, in terms of obesity. When we look at it, and ironically, in 1990, we started, okay, Louisiana seafood diet. Somewhat some physical activity. I would even say Illinois, somewhat some physical activity, but a meat and potato diet. Okay, 1990, we're roughly the same as you look across. 2000, we're roughly the same. But what happened in 2010 when we started to separate? What were those changing dynamics that were going on? I'm not sure what they were, but in terms of places where I chose to live or my footprint, it appears that I'm still not making, I don't know if I'm making the best choices. So let's move a little bit more into New Orleans. So again, looking at violent crime. Okay, so let's start looking at violent crime. Did I put myself in a position where I could be a victim, or I can actually become, who actually carry out a crime? You can think of it both ways. Here, again, my grandmother's house. Here's my high school. Here's where I went to college. Here's where we want to live. And here is what we came. They didn't map this out, but this is where I grew up. And so far, in terms of my footprint, where I mostly hang out, there was really less violent crime in those areas. But it was happening. I just knew where to go and not to go. All right, you look at Illinois, okay, in terms of violent crime, okay, where I currently live is right here, where there's been victims of crime. Now, as my colleague, Mr. Harrington, informed you, I got my high school diploma, I got my bachelor's degree, I got my MPH, I got my PhD. So where am I choosing to live? What's making that choice for me? What's happening around me? You would sit here and say, well, you got a PhD, why don't you go up to right here, the wealthiest suburb in the U.S.? Well, I can't afford it. Okay, so is it that I can't afford it, or something else happening? Okay. Let's look at rates. So again, keep mapping everything on. Okay. So again, grandmother's house, high school, Tulane, where I grew up at. Okay. And you can see that large purples, that large concentration, it was really not to, when I went to college, is where there was a higher concentration of Caucasian Americans. Map it again. Okay, so as we keep mapping each other. So you see, right here, this is where I'm right here, in terms of Chicago. This is one of the suburbs. High concentration where African Americans are in purple, and blues where our concentration. So actually, I think I'm right on that line. Okay. So is that playing a part? Is race and place playing a part in my life expectancy? Will that play a part? And I apologize. I wanted to sit here and say New Orleans now 34th in black-white segregation among top 100 metro areas, and Chicago is fourth. So now coming to the conclusion of this conversation I'm having with my colleagues and having with you, as you're thinking about this, race and place matters. Okay. So, all right, let's look at, look at my footprint again, and let's look at life expectancy. So grandmother's house, where I went to high school, Tulane, where we want to live if we come back, where I grew up. And that is saying that that footprint area is about 72 to 74 is where they're saying, okay, that's your life expectancy. Should you live? I'm interpreting that's where you want to live. So remember, my mother was born and gave me 75 years. Okay. So I don't know why I kept along those choices that kept me in the same life expectancy category. Okay. Was it race? Was it those social correlative factors playing in the background? And where I've moved, where I've spent half my other part of my life. Looking at Chicago, where I currently live, that life expectancy is 74.5. So at the end of this, everything's the same. So the question really is,
you know, as a black male in the U.S., will I make it to 74? Okay, I'm 30, 35 years off from here. But there are a lot of factors that could come along from health, employment. I can see here saying marriage was, you know, we don't say social correlate, but marriage is playing a part in this life expectancy. But will I make it to 74? So I leave you with that thought as I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Mason. And you can saw Dr. Kittle started where that gene. So for my mother, starting as those with that the 23 for my dad and 23 for my mom. Okay. So now Dr. Mason, who's going to see what are those helping me understand those decisions I'm going to have to make, or what's those pressures that are going to ensure that I make it to 74. It's a continuing story. So if you do go to Chicago, I'm going to flip the story around in part two. Okay. For next year in APHA. Just a setup. Thank you.